You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
And a very special and unique Saturday afternoon, considering that it is 9/11. And we do have a really good show lined up for you on this Saturday afternoon. Steve Verderosa, former scout for the Giants for over 30 years, is going to be on with us every Saturday. Well, he typically joins me on Friday night for my gambling show, but I know a lot of people aren't up on Friday from 10 to midnight, or maybe you're out partying. Look, all the power to you. And so I like to replay that segment on Saturday. I have immense respect for Steve Verderosa. He's one of the best in the business. And so just as one, a very dear friend of mine, he's doing us the pleasure of analyzing the tapes and giving us a really deep analysis as a former scout in the NFL for 30 years on both the Giants and the Jets. So we'll hear from him at 12:30. Excited about that. Obviously, Subway Series, front and center, Yankees-Mets. Mets 10-3 last night. A lot wrong with the Yankees, let's be honest. Ebb and flow to the season. Lows, highs, we're back down to the low. David Lennon from Newsday is going to join us at 1 o'clock. We'll dive into the Subway Series. Cynthia Freeland back with us every Saturday afternoon, which I'm excited about. She's one of my dearest friends, and she's just a rock star on the NFL Network. She'll be joining us at 1:30. She'll give us her picks, her plays, her thoughts on the Jets and the Giants, as well as fantasy football. I'll take calls throughout the show in regard to fantasy football and, of course, all things NFL. We'll have a click or don't click with you. We've got two of our best producers back in the studio, and Ty and Jake, this afternoon, which is great. And as always, Joe Wiz, who has his own gambling show here on 98.7 ESPN on Friday nights and Saturday mornings, will join us at 2:30 with his plays and his picks, maybe some late college picks, as well as his NFL picks going into week one. I know it's week one, Thursday. What a treat. I don't know about you. I was expecting a complete blowout, and that wasn't the case. I think Giants, Eagles, Washington, listen, take notice, because this is a Dallas Cowboys team that that really impressed me. Dak Prescott really impressed me. So not the game script that I was anticipating, to be quite frank, but entertaining nonetheless. So, and a lot more, obviously, this Sunday. Again, I just, somebody pinch me. I can't even believe week one is already here, and tomorrow's going to be so much fun. We've got a huge announcement that we're going to make. I don't know, Ty, I think maybe we should make it. Let's do this, because here's the thing. Cynthia Freeland, we're going to make the announcement with Cynthia Freeland at 1:30. We have a huge announcement to make about our New York Game Day show, which launches here. We're back in action again tomorrow, of course, as always, 7 to 8 a.m., all things fantasy with me, Fantasy Forecast, getting you ready for week one. A lot of questions in regard to what's going on with that Baltimore Ravens backfield. I know that. And then from 8 to 10 is New York Game Day. Mike Tannenbaum is back on board, but we also have another special announcement. Who else is going to be joining our show this year? And we're really excited about it. We're going to make that announcement with Cynthia Freeland, because here's a little nugget for you. Cynthia Freeland went to college with the individual who's going to be joining our New York Game Day broadcast. Cynthia, how about that? There we go. Little nugget for you. Try to guess and see who it is. But I need to start the show. And again, we're going to be all sports, but I feel that it's important that I do start the show in regard to 9/11. And I just want to share with you my experience, because I do believe it's a unique one. I'm not from New York. I'm from Miami. We all know where we were when 9/11 happened. And I was in Miami. I was playing women's professional football, and I was just recovering from bilateral ACL reconstruction. Both my ACLs were torn. And I decided to have bilateral ACL reconstruction 6 weeks apart. It was supposed to be 12 weeks, but I healed so quickly. Doctor said, "All right, Anita, let's ramp it up." And so 6 weeks apart, I had both my ACLs repaired, and I was going to therapy every day because they were alternating therapy on each knee. And I remember, so I was in Miami. I was on my way to my physical therapy appointment, and word had spread down in Miami that a plane had hit one of the towers in New York City. And of course, as we all remember, the initial thought was commuter flight, commuter plane, horrible accident. Oh no, hope people are going to be okay. And then I remember walking into my physical therapy room, and they have TVs all over. And then that's when we saw the second plane hit. And that's when we realized this was not an accident. And they shut down the physical therapy. I remember rushing home and was just mesmerized and just did not leave the TV set for hours and days. But here's the thing. It was from afar, it's different, right? Like you're not in it. You're not experiencing it. You're not in the day to day. You're not 1 degree, 2 degree, 3 degree of separation where I was. So yes, all of us across the country in other parts, in other cities, in other states that we were living, of course, we were sad. We were emotional. We couldn't stop watching the news and everything that was being reported and how horrifying the situation was. But from a distance, you don't get, and you didn't get the feel of really what was transpiring here. So now fast forward, I was in Miami for quite a few years. I spent 4 years in Baltimore and then got a job offer to come here and work for The Fan. Mark Chernoff convinced me to come to New York City. I did. And so now I'm here in New York City. I've lived in Hoboken now for 11 years and I'm getting emotional. It's just who I am. I apologize. But my time here and the people that I've met here who experienced 9/11 in a variety of ways, whether it was they were in the tower, whether they lost a family member or a loved one in the tower. I'm sure a lot of people are aware of this. You know, I've become, Hoboken is my home now. Like Hoboken is my home. And the number of people that I've met and I've spoken to and I've had conversations with in regard to like getting in boats and, you know, taking their boats across the Hudson and saving people and bringing them back to Jersey. The stories are endless. And the heroism was endless. And Tina Servasio is one of my dearest friends and she lives in Clifton. And not sure if a lot of people are aware of this, but Clifton was a town because of the commute. A lot of people who, financial advisors, people who were in the finance business, a lot of them lived in Clifton because of the commute and it was easy for them to get to downtown and the financial district. And so Clifton was hit really, really hard. And so meeting and getting to know a lot of people who live in Clifton and just how hard that area of New Jersey was hit because of the number of people who lived there was is really touching. And then on top of that, I volunteer for the Ray Pfeiffer Foundation and what it does each and every year. I play in a golf tournament and also I'm hosting the event this October. And I've got to meet a ton of firefighters who were there for 9/11 and days after 9/11 and got to know them and all that they've been dealing with. It's not just, of course, the folks who unfortunately passed away in 9/11. It's those that are dealing with so many illnesses and ailments because of their efforts and their heroism. And I've gotten to know them extremely well and all that they go through. And so it's a different experience when you're, and again, I wasn't here, I was away, but the time that I've been here in New York City, the 12 plus years, and the people that I've got to meet and the people that I've got to know and the people I've gotten close with, who have the personal experiences, have moved me beyond. And, so today I want to dedicate our show, not just me. Of course, we've got producers Ty and Jake who are back in the studio. So I want to dedicate this show to all those that unfortunately perished in the towers, as well as their families, as well as all the people out there that I know, and maybe people I don't know, that worked so hard and sacrificed so much to do so much post 9/11. And so today I was sitting in my bed this morning with my dogs and my coffee, like I always do on Saturday morning. And I was watching SportsCenter and I was preparing for the show. And Adam Schefter has this amazing interview with Robert Saleh. It's really, really amazing. If you haven't seen it yet, you got to look for it. I'm certain that Countdown is going to play it tomorrow morning. But it's all about if you didn't love Robert Sala already, I don't know how you can't now, right? Like, his story was amazing. His family were in finance, and so he was a loan officer, and his brother, I think it was like his first day on the job, was in the towers when the plane hit, and he was just telling the story of, you know, him and his family thought that they had lost his brother, and what a wake-up call that was for him to say, listen, this business isn't for me, this job, this career isn't for me, I need to be on the football field, and how 9/11 really catapulted him into getting a job in college football, which now look at him, it comes full circle. He's not just a head coach of any football team, he's the head coach of the New York Jets, which obviously New York, as we know, obviously 9/11. So it just comes full circle for him. And it's a really amazing story, and it's an inspirational story. And I was crying while I was watching Adam Schefter and him interview Robert Sala. It was very emotional. And then it was just timed so perfectly. As soon as that interview and that piece was done, was the moment of silence outside of the World Trade Center and World Trade One right now. And so they went to that. And I don't know how you can have a dry eye if you're not watching that. And so I came across this poem. I love poetry. So I came across this poem. So I just want to share it with you. And then we'll go to break and we'll start talking sports. This is just, to me, this poem represents, I think, where we all are right now, even though this happened 20 years ago, how it, you know, it's so moving. It's so emotional. There's so many feelings that we still, even 20 years ago, that we still experience. And this is called Something in My Eye. The writer is Michael Updike. He's a singer-songwriter and author. Seems 100 years ago, but it really wasn't that long. I was serving my own way. Others grabbed their guns. Everything we ever knew changed in those blue skies. Every year around this time, there's something in my eye. Towers blazing, tumbled down. Liberty crashed to the ground. Prayers we sent for those who died. There's something in my eye. Remember how smoke billowed high and cloud blew Virginia skies. Fields of fire, no one survives. There's something in my eye. America walked hand in hand and looked to God on high. Prayers we prayed for those who died. There's something in my eye. Tears we cried for those who died. There's something in my eye. So, there was definitely something in my eye this morning. And again, I just want to dedicate this show to, unfortunately, all those that we lost, their families, and all those heroes who worked post 9/11.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Why sit some guy week one and all of a sudden they're playing week two, they're full go? What's happening in that 1 or 2 weeks after he's had, you know, 10 months to recover? So I know the Giants will be smart and do what's right, but if he's ready to play, I think you got to get him out there, get him reps, and whether he's a starter, where he might not get 30 carries week one, but, you know, just to get him in the game, get his confidence back going, get his feel back going, catching the football, feeling the rush, taking a hit, all those things need to happen a little bit for him just to get back in the feel of things. So he's such a dominant player. They need him to be successful this year, running the football, catching the football. And then when he's on the field, it changes the game plan of the defense, and they got to prepare more for different things. And so it should open up other players, and they have the skill set on the outside with Kenny Golladay and Sterling Shepard and Evan Engram to get them the ball and let them make some plays.
That is Eli Manning on the new show. Well, it's kind of an old show, but new face, and that's Max Kellerman, who joins Keyshawn and Jay Will. Thank you, Jake. Hey, New York Game Day with me is brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup now. Get your offers across the full lineup. Shop at your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com. Excited about New York game day. Again, we've got an exciting announcement to make coming your way at 1:30 this afternoon. So that's definitely appointment radio. Anyway, that was Eli Manning. He's talking about Saquon Barkley. Ian Rappaport from the NFL Network came out, was it yesterday, late last night, whatever the case may be, and said, Saquon Barkley is 100% and he's ready to go. Okay, what does that mean? Do I think that Saquon Barkley is going to be active? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to get 20 touches? Hell no. I do not. So if I had a dollar, I mean, more people are asking me about the fantasy implications, the fantasy football implications of Saquon Barkley more than any player out there. It's pretty wild, to be quite frank. But, you know, keep this in mind. And I think Adrian Peterson set an unrealistic bar for a lot of us. Saquon didn't just tear his ACL. Right. It was a number of other things. Right. PCL, meniscus. In fact, to the point like he couldn't get in there and have surgery as quickly as somebody would like to, because he needed other things to heal somewhat before they could get in there and do what they needed to do. And so typically listen, I've had 7 knee surgeries. I'm not comparing myself to Saquon Barkley, his thigh is as big as my waistline. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm saying is the average individual probably takes a good year and a half to recover from ACL. Your athlete usually takes a year to heal from an ACL. We're maybe 10 plus months in. So first of all, this is kind of remarkable that he's going to be active. I actually thought that the Giants would put him on IR and have him not play for the first 3 weeks of the season, and then he could come off of IR week 4 against the Saints. That's really what I was anticipating them doing. That's not the case. Obviously, what Ian Rappaport is reporting, I do believe that he'll be active, but I still think the Giants need to be extremely careful here. I find it hard to believe that the knee is 100%. Especially since it wasn't just an ACL. So, you know, what are my realistic expectations for Saquon Barkley? I don't know, maybe 10, 12 carries, if that. I will tell you this. I know that the organization loves Devontae Booker. I think Devontae Booker is going to get more work, more time, more touches, more carries than Saquon Barkley tomorrow against Denver. I really do. And he's going to need to, because when you look at the matchup with the Denver Broncos, how can this Giants team, whose offensive line is in question, right? It's the Giants' offensive line has just been getting destroyed with a number of analysts across the board. Question marks about Saquon Barkley. Question marks about Galladay. You know, to me, I love the signing of Galladay, but what have we seen? We really haven't seen anything. And reporters really haven't seen anything either. Keep in mind, reporters aren't out there for the entire time of practice. And we haven't seen him play in a game. I don't know. Does Galladay come out and just like ball out tomorrow? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, Denver's, their secondary is really good. They've got a top 5 secondary in the NFL. So how do you beat Denver? I think you run the ball, and I think you got to run the ball effectively against them, eat up time of possession, because it's not like if you go up like 14 points on Denver, as much as I love Teddy Bridgewater, and what do I love about Teddy Bridgewater? He's a smart quarterback. He's a great leader. His completion percentage is, so this is interesting. Last year, Teddy Bridgewater as a starter had a better completion percentage than Tom Brady and had a higher yards per completion than Russell Wilson. Just marinate in that for a minute. Okay? Higher completion percentage than last year as a starter for the Carolina Panthers. Higher completion percentage than Tom Brady and higher yards per reception completion than Russell Wilson. He's just He's automatic. He's consistent. He's smart with the football. He doesn't turn it over. He throws it where it needs to be thrown. He doesn't put his wide receivers in harm's way. He just, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, he checks all the consistency boxes. And because Denver has so many weapons, wait until you see this Javonte Williams kid that they drafted, the running back. Whoa. I had Jeff Legwald on the show last night. I filled in for Chris Carlin last night. He said, boy, this young man is really, really something special. So I think this is going to be a game where I think it's going to be a very low scoring game. I think whoever wins, it's going to be 17-10, 20-13. So I really like the under here. The over-under is at 41.5. I really love the under in this game. But if the Giants have a real shot of beating the Denver Broncos tomorrow, they're going to have to run the football. Okay? They're going to have to run the football. And again, I'm expecting a heavier dose of Devontae Booker tomorrow than Saquon Barkley.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Let's go to Danny in Long Island. Danny, you're up. Welcome in.
Hey, Anita. Good afternoon. Always a somber day, and having actually been a lieutenant in the police department in the city, obviously I know people and friends who didn't make it home that day. But, you know, I always think of a certain little boy. At the time, I was coaching my son's soccer team. I think he was about 8 or 9 at the time. There was a boy on the team, and his father always showed up to watch the games and practices. He was in business attire. And I went over and had a couple of conversations with him over the course of the season. He was a very respectful gentleman. And then everything happened, and there was so much death on Long Island. My town was devastated that I kind of lost track of everything. And then the season was over, and then I ran into the boy at a store with his mother, and I said, oh, how's a – and I didn't even know. They said, no, his dad was killed. And I think of him all the time because my child had a completely different path through life and had his dad at the sidelines whenever he played over the last 20 years, and this boy didn't have that opportunity. And I always think of him, and I see him once in a while in town, and when he sees me, he calls me Coach Dan because that's how he knew me as. And I see a pain look in his eyes because he remembers me from a time when he had his dad. And then this morning I go to work and I open up my page of the New York Post, and there's a picture of this young man on page 5, Twin Towers children who had to share their stories. I burst into tears. Here's a picture of the kid that I remember as an 8-year-old, and now here he is in the paper just, you know, giving his story. And as those are the people I think of. The people who I know who went in, that's what they chose. They chose to do. They were heroes. They were heroic. They chose the profession. This little boy did not choose that. And these are the victims that I think of on this day, the children who didn't have a father or a mother at the sidelines when they were playing their youth sports. So that's the sad part of the day for me. I think of it all the time, not just on today. And it's almost embarrassing to pivot to, like, fantasy football. But that's what my thoughts are today. All these little children, they're 20-year-old men now. They're 20, they're 30-year-old. They lost their dads. And I don't know how, knowing how much of a role I played in my kids' lives, I don't know how you get past that for the rest of your life. And if you read these stories today, one woman was walked down the aisle by her stepdad. She said, it was nice, but it wasn't my dad. You know, I don't know how you get past that. Such a monumental loss. But you know what? I'm not even going to ask a stupid fantasy football question because it's for another day when I'm in a better spirit, because this day in my heart belongs to all these people that are still suffering. And they'll be suffering forever. And a man died yesterday of 9/11 cancer, a firefighter. It just never, ever ends. It never ends. It's just so sad. But anyway, Danny, I appreciate everything you do.
Danny, thank you for your phone call. Again, I volunteer for the Ray Pfeiffer Foundation. If you don't know about it, look it up. But I've had the, and I'll say the pleasure, because they're wonderful men, firefighters who are struggling right now. It's really unbelievable. Let's go to Val in the Bronx. Val, you're up.
Good afternoon. How you doing, Anita?
Hi, Val.
How are you?
Okay.
I tell you, man, it's a kind of bittersweet moment. I got some comments, some sport comments I want to get into with you, but you know, the one thing I will say about a day like today, I kind of walk a tightrope, because I know folks, and not related to 9/11, but I have a friend of mine who lost his mom just before Christmas. And every year, like, it's almost like he can't celebrate Christmas. And sometimes I wonder, you know, as much as the honorable thing is to show as much respect and love, and offer as many blessings as we can to people who have lost someone from 9/11. I also wonder if sometimes it kind of gets to a point where, like, you know, they're constantly being reminded of it. If that is the case and you're constantly being reminded of it, just know that people are only doing that because they love, they respect, and they hold you dear in their heart, and they really feel for you. So if that helps make it a little bit easier to deal with it, you know, kind of take it that way. And like the gentleman just said just now, it's kind of hard to even get into what I wanted to talk to you about now. Just to switch a little bit to sports, two things. For one, my friend, every time I think I have all the reasons that I need to hold you in high regard, did you say that you rehabbed two ACLs at the same time?
I elected to have bilateral ACL reconstruction. Idiot I am.
That is absolutely insane. That is absolutely insane. I wanted to ask you a couple of things, Joe, just to get back to the Jets. You know me, I'm a big Jets fan, and I'm really excited about what's going to happen with Zach. So my thing is, you know, as best as we can, make everything around him as easy as possible. I'm not worried about the wide receivers. I'm not too concerned about the line. The thing that really concerns me, from what you know and what you've heard from the insiders, is there going to be one of the guys that's in the running back room that's actually going to stand out and get the brunt of the work and be effective at it? And then also, with the tight ends, that, you know, they cut so many tight ends. And I've heard some insiders say that it's because they feel so confident about the guys that they have in the room. Is there a bona fide reason for that? Anything that you know that could kind of help me, give me a little bit of confidence before we start the season off tomorrow? I'm going to leave it at that. And again, I'm sorry, you go ahead.
No. I was just going to say thank you for your call, Val. I appreciate it. A few things in regard to the running back situation. I'm hearing running back by committee. What's really unique about the running backs that are on this Jets roster is they're all so different in regard to their skill set. So I think a lot of who's going to be utilized is going to dictate down and distance what the situation is. I truly believe that. I'm a big fan of Michael Carter. He's just real small. He's a really little guy. So, we'll see what happens there. But, I've got big expectations for him besides his size. We'll see what happens. But I think the running back room there is just going to be – the usage is going to be dictated by – what the situation is, third down, second down, third and long, third and one, and we'll see how that all plays out. In regard to the tight ends, I really think they're going to be utilized more in pass protection than they are in receiving. You know, there are a lot of weapons on this wide receiving core. You know, I'm excited to see what Elijah Moore can do, but Jamison Crowder is out, as we know, because of COVID-19. So I think that's going to be a huge hit. And unfortunately, you know, I think a lot of people are sleeping on this Carolina Panthers defense, top five in points scored defensively last year in the NFL. I think this is going to be a rough week one. Also, Jets defense, their secondary is porous, so I think Sam Darnold and their weapons are going to have their way, and I don't think the starting field position for Zach Wilson is going to be really beneficial for him. I think he's going to be in a lot of third and long situations. I think he's going to see a lot of exotic blitz packages that he did not see at BYU. I think it potentially could be a really, really long day for Zach Wilson.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. This is Click.
Click. Click. Click.
Or don't. Very simply, here's the headline. Are you interested in clicking or not?
That's right. It's time for Click or Don't Click. A fun way that we take our tour around our wide, wide world of sport. We find out what is trending based on the headlines of what is out there. And we typically allow our producers to lead the way. And of course, we've got Ty and Jake. Guys, what is trending right now?
What an embarrassment for the New York Yankees. And I hear the dogs in the background. They're embarrassed, yeah, too. They're Yankee fans. They're not happy with what's going on.
Yeah, somebody's having a party outside. I'm going to shut my door. But by all means, yes, I'm clicking that.
Well, the Yankees last night, I mean, just because they couldn't help themselves, lost for the seventh straight time. So after going 35-11, they've responded to that by going 2-11. Last night came to the Mets, 10-3 was the final score. Aaron Boone, do you think your team was unfocused coming into this game?
No, I did not. I've been asking that question a lot, and no, I think these guys are desperately trying to turn this around. I think they are committed to their process, to what they're doing. We're not getting results right now. We're all pissed off about that. But as far as the intent and these guys' focus, it's there. We got to play better. You know, we've got to, you know, pitch by pitch, you know, we've got to play better. And when it's not going well tonight, we got to continue to grind away, even when it's difficult. And we need to be better at that.
So it was all cute when we thought the Yankees could actually catch Tampa in the division race. They're now 10 games back. Tampa can't stop winning. The Yankees can't stop losing. In the wild card race, the Yankees tied in the loss column with the Red Sox, but they've played two more games, so they're plus one. The Blue Jays also tied with the Yankees in the loss column. The Yankees have played one more game. They're plus one in the win column, but it's all falling apart. I know you and Jake just spoke about it a couple minutes ago. Are you giving up? I don't give up on the team just because they've got so much talent. But when you go out there and lose 10-3 to them, no one loses to the Mets, especially 10-3. Hard to take you seriously when this is what's happening.
Well, I mean, it's definitely mental and folk. It's mental errors, and I know you're a huge fan. Like, it's just, how are these guys? Like, I don't think they're focusing. It's like they're off in space. Of course, I'm talking about Sanchez. I'm trying to think what the phrase or the word is. Like,
a sense of urgency?
There you go. There's Ooh. Not. And thank you.
Wow. Look at us.
Look at us. Yeah. But there needs to be right now. Like, you know, you're not playing around anymore. Like, to catch the Rays, that's out of the question. Like, let's shelf that. Like, but you've got this is going to be a race till the finish in regard to the wild card. And again, you know, I know we had David Lennon on just a few minutes ago. You know, eventually, if they continue to lose, conversation is then going to turn from, oh, you know, how much noise can the Yankees make in the postseason to, okay, what changes are going to need to be made heading into next year? Because as magnificent as this roster looks on paper, okay?
It's not coming together.
It's not. It's not.
And when you fire a World Series winning manager in Joe Girardi, who got them in 2017 to game 27 outs away from the World Series appearance, you know, they lost to the cheating Astros. When you fire that guy and you bring in, you know, a manager devoid of any experience, it's a lot of pressure on you. And I know Boone in his first two seasons won 100-plus games. You know, the Yankees last year got to the division series. They won one playoff series under Aaron Boone, or two playoff series, I believe, under Aaron Boone. Not exactly what you were expecting when you put this team together and you thought they were going to go on a run. And to listen to him, you know, press conference after press conference, just ooze with positivity as if the sun is just going to shine tomorrow. I actually jokingly said, we should have had Boone doing the daily COVID briefings. I mean, he's just so positive. It's amazing.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say this. And listen, I know folks know this. Paul Dottino, who is part of the Giants broadcast team, is one of my dearest friends. He's like a brother to me. And he's a huge Yankees fan. Huge. I talked to Paul like two or three times during the course of the week. And granted, Paul's very old school. Right? Like Joe Torre, like he wants Boone to get fired up. And my conversation with him is always like, well, we don't know what happens behind closed doors. And, you know, and I hear that not just from Paul, but I hear that from a lot of Yankee fans who I'm friends with. And like, they're frustrated that Boone doesn't wear his emotions on his sleeve. He sits there in the dugout. He blows the bubbles. He chomps on his bubble gum. You know, every now and then he'll put his head down, put his face in his hands, look up. But, like, there's no fire there. There's no, you know, and so does that irritate you? Like, and again, listen, we don't know, like, in life, right? We don't know what happens behind closed doors with people, right? Like, you think somebody's one way, and then you find out at some point in time down the line that they're another. Like, we don't know. Is he fired up in the clubhouse? Is he fired up in his office? Does he call the guys in his office and rip them a new behind? Like we don't know what happens, but you know, image is everything, and the image that he's portraying right now while he's sitting out there in the clubhouse is that, like, he loves bazooka gum. Like, you know, that's, and I don't think that's, I don't, because this team is struggling, I don't think that image in that look is doing well for him.
Yeah, it's not working. Clearly,
no.
The team has a lack of focus, no sense of urgency. They're playing as if they're the Rays with a 10-game cushion in the division, and they've got some, you know, sweet path to the postseason where we can just pencil them in for a World Series appearance against, you know, the Padres, Giants, or Dodgers. But, you know, they're struggling right now. What do you got, Jake?
All right, so moving from baseball to football, my title for you is Welcome Back to the GOAT. Click or don't click?
This is not going to make her happy.
I think I want to vomit. Here,
this might be the first don't click.
I think I want to vomit.
Not clicking on a football story. Anita, what's happened to you?
All right, I'll click, but I know I just want to vomit. Here,
all right,
go
Anita,
ahead.
So you probably figured who I'm talking about with the GOAT, and I'm sorry for making you throw up on live radio, but football is back, and football fans could not be happier. The Bucs defeated the Cowboys 31-29 on opening night, and what a great first game it's been. After 214 days of not having any football, the wait was well worth it. And, of course, as I just mentioned, NFL couldn't be happier with the game won. Exciting till the very end. And I feel like I'm not the only person. I know you felt the same way, even though you have certain feelings about him. But when Brady got the ball back with 1 minute left, I don't think there was a single person in the world that thought they were going to lose the game. And the fact that we live in this reality where a starting quarterback has 7 Super Bowl rings and is 44 years old, and he's still probably the best player in football, is insane. But he talked after the game, and he feels like he's come a long way since week one of last season.
Last year sucked after the first game. Let me say that. That was come a long way from 365 days ago. That was a pretty lonely feeling after the game there in the Superdome. But we won. It's great. But, you know, we know that it was a far from perfect, and we got to get back to work and clean a lot of stuff up.
And not just the Bucks, but, I mean, I'm a Giants fan, so I'm not the biggest Cowboys guy. But if you're a Cowboys fan, you kind of have to be encouraged by this performance. A lot of people thought they were going to get blown out. They were in it to the very end of the game. And if I'm a Cowboys fan, even though you just lost a heartbreaker, you're going into week one losing in a nail biter at the very end to arguably the best team in the NFL and the current Super Bowl champs. And on the opposite side of things, we just heard Tom Brady, and Dak Prescott said that he's very proud of his team despite the losing effort.
We fought hard. We fought all the way to there in the end. That's a good football team that we're playing. They got us by a field goal right there. We've got to be better situationally. In the red zone, defense did a great job giving us chances when we didn't convert touchdowns or field goals and getting us the ball right back. They did an incredible job, and we'll get better because of this one. Obviously, it was tough. Tough anytime you don't win. As I said, it's the expectations for this team, for myself.
And as I keep mentioning, Thursday's game was just such a great game in general. So my question for you, Anita, is do you think any game tomorrow or the Monday game will outdo Thursday night's game?
Wow. A few things. Number one, I think the Dallas Cowboys just put all of the NFC East on notice. That is not game script. That is not how I anticipated it to play out. That's for sure. And Dak Prescott was, you know, uber impressive
And Zeke wasn't. And, you know, Zeke had a terrible game, and they still had the lead with 1 minute left. So if I'm a Cowboys fan, as tough as a week one loss is, I'm encouraged by it.
Yeah, I'm not. I didn't, you know me, I'm in 12 fantasy football leagues. I didn't draft.
Why not 13? Well, I still feel like you should have gone for the 13.
Yeah, I
usually
know, right?
I usually cut it off myself after 11 leagues, but 12, yeah, that's pushing it, Anita.
My point is, in all 12, I did not draft Ezekiel Elliott. Not a fan. I think he's completely overrated. And also, I love Tony Pollard. And man, that was one of my best bets on Thursday night. Tony Pollard over rushing and receiving yards. Tony Pollard over receptions. I don't think Tony Pollard would be a number one running back on any other roster. I think this is going to be more of a committee in that backfield, regardless of the amount of money that the Dallas Cowboys are paying Ezekiel Elliott. I think this is going to be more of a committee because Pollard is a different change of back. I think he adds a little bit more life, a little bit more oomph. I'm just not a fan.
One last Cowboys question for you. So mm-hmm. I know you're a big fantasy person, as we just talked about, 12 leagues, which it might be the most impressive thing you might hear all day, but in the rankings before the season started, a lot of rankings had CeeDee Lamb over Amari Cooper. Do you think by the end of this season that CeeDee Lamb will be the Cowboys' number one wide receiver?
Yeah, and in all, I did not draft Amari Cooper in any of my leagues either. I did draft CeeDee Lamb. I want to say I have him in like 5 of my 12. You know, he's unbelievable. Like, you can't cover him. You can't. He's that exceptional, and it's evident that Dak Prescott trusts him, and he's gonna be a target monster all season long. Like, CeeDee Lamb could very well end up being, I wouldn't be surprised, ends up being like top 5 fantasy football wide receiver in regard, especially in a PPR, because you saw it on Thursday night. I think you'll continue to see it. Dak looks his way. I wouldn't be surprised if he averages anywhere between 7-8. In some games, 10 targets a game. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, both Cooper and CeeDee Lamb both had very impressive games. And one stat that I saw that you probably noticed as well is the amount of pass attempts in Thursday's game. I don't know if that's going to be a trend moving forward, but Dak Prescott threw 58 passes and Tom Brady threw 50 himself. So 108 combined pass attempts. I feel like that's a lot.
Oh, are you kidding? A lot? That's more than a lot. But here's the thing, and again, I'm not a big Mike McCarthy fan either as a head coach, but I think you have to commend him with his game plan, right? He said, okay, no one can run against the Tampa Bay Bucs defense. You just cannot.
Yeah,
teams only averaged 3.6 yards per carry against them last year.
So here's the thing.
So let me finish. Teams threw the ball 65% of the time on them last year. And so he went in saying, we're not going to be able to run the ball on them, no matter who's in that backfield. So we're going to have to pass the ball. And so I commend him on being committed to a game plan that, at the end of the day, guys, Dallas should have won. Dallas should have won that game on Thursday night.
I don't know. You can argue both sides, because the Patriots did have Chris Godwin clearly, you know, for a touchdown. And I'm sorry, the Patriots, the Bucks. Chris Godwin for a touchdown, then he fumbles the ball into the end zone. So that would have pretty much put the game away. They would have gone up 2 scores. You know, Brady throws 2 picks, and one of them wasn't his fault. It bounced off of Fournette. The other one was into the end zone on a Hail Mary. So I guess you could say winning the turnover battle 4-1, Dak goes out there and throws for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns. Yeah, they should have won the game. But there's a lot that the Bucs could have done as well that could have helped distance them as far as that game being close in the end.
Anything else we got?
Oh, just finally. So I came across this last week on ESPN.com. It was ceilings and floors for all of the 32 teams. For the Jets, they had the ceiling at 9-8, they had the floor at 4-13. For the Giants, they had the ceiling at 10-7 and the floor at 5-12. Your thoughts? So we start with the Jets. So their ceiling is 9-8, their floor is 4-13. Your thoughts?
Like I said, I think I'll be shocked if they win more than 4 games. So I want to say the over under. I think the over under for them is at 6.
So you have them winning 3 games this year.
Hold on 1 second. Let's
a wager coming between us. Feel it.
Let's look. Okay, so here we go. At Panthers, they lose. Patriots, they lose. Broncos, they lose. Titans, they lose. Falcons, maybe. I'll give them that. Maybe. That's a maybe. Patriots, again, they lose. Cincinnati, I'll give them a maybe. That's 3. Colts, they lose. Bills, they lose. Dolphins, I'll give them a maybe. That's 3. Texans, I'll give that to them. That's 4. Eagles, they lose. Saints, they lose. Dolphins, I think they split. Jags. So, I've got three good wins and I've got 2 maybes.
This feels like spades.
I have three good.
I have two possibles.
I have three. Yeah, and I will put the ace on my forehead when I beat you. I have three wins. Like, I've got three. Yeah, you know what? They'll win. And then I've got two. Maybe I'll give it to them.
So what are we gonna do with this? Let's create a friendly wager here.
How about we have it at six, and I say less than six wins. So if they win six or more, you win. How's that?
I think it's,
six or more, you win. I think that's fair.
5.5 feels more fair.
Well, that would be six or more. So if they win six games.
Oh, six or more. You're saying I win. No push.
Right. If they win six games,
or more.
You win.
Okay.
You win. And what are we wagering?
You tell me.
Are you into wine now? You know me. I'm always a sucker for a wine bet.
All right. Let's do it. We can do wine.
Okay. All right. Done. Now, Giants.
So they have the Giants ceiling at 10-7. The floor is at 5-12.
Okay. So let's take a look at the Giants schedule. They lose to the Broncos this week. They lose to Washington. I think they beat the Falcons. So that's one. I think they lose to the Saints. I think they lose to the Cowboys. I think they lose to the Rams. I think they beat the Panthers. That's two. I think they lose to the Chiefs. I think they beat the Raiders. That's three. I think they lose to the Bucks. I think they beat the Eagles. That's four. I think they beat the Dolphins. That's five. I think they beat the Chargers. That's six. I think they lose to the Cowboys. I think they beat the Eagles again. That's seven. I think they beat the Bears. That's eight. And I think they lose again to Washington the last game of the season. So I've got them winning eight games.
You got the Giants winning eight games.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Just because of their defense. And I think eventually the offense will come around.
Which is tough because you don't want to be, you know, what is that, 8-9? You're not making the playoffs at 8-9. You don't have a high draft pick. You know, I know you got Chicago's first rounder. 8-9 is a terrible place to be if you're the Giants.
So what? It's purgatory. What is their ceiling? What is their floor?
So the ceiling is 10-7. The floor is at 5-12.
Okay. So what do you think? Are you more optimistic
about the Giants? No, I'm not sold on Daniel Jones. The offensive line's a mess. I don't know how healthy Saquon Barkley is going to be. The defense should be pretty good, but. I just don't think they're.
I think the defense is going to be really good. So for me, so this bet, let's reverse it. So for me, Giants have to win eight games. Giants win eight games, I win.
Okay, seven or fewer, I win. I've got an addendum. How about this? I just thought. So for your TV show, are you allowed to like wear whatever you want?
Yeah.
I would love for you to host a show.
Oh gosh. Where is this going?
Oh, this is awesome. I would love for you. So let's just forget the wine thing. If the Jets win six or more games, you've got to host a TV show wearing a LeBron James jersey.
I don't know if I'll be able to make it through an
and
hour.
And if the Giants or seven or fewer, you've got to host a show wearing a Tom Brady jersey.
Oh, I don't know if I'll be able to make the
that's,
hour.
That's perfect. That's the
done.
Bet right there.
Okay, done.
That's
I
bet.
Win. I get two bottles of wine, nothing less than $30. If you win, I wear a LeBron jersey for one show and a Tom Brady jersey for the other.
Yeah, then you got to give me a shout out too.
Done.
Let's do it.
Joe, what's up, man? How you doing?
Not much. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited, Anita. Got off to a great start on Thursday, and hopefully we can make some more money today.
Good for you. You know, that line kept on moving up. It scared me. I took a step back. But what I did play is over 30.5 total points for the Tampa Bay Bucks, and of course, by the skin of my chinny-chin-chin, that landed. And I won with a lot of prop bets. I had over on Blake Jarwin, the tight end for the Dallas Cowboys, over with Tony Pollard. I knew that he was going to be a big part of that offense in the passing game. So I'm with you. I'm playing with some house money, but you know, how fortunate are we that we got that Thursday night game? A different game script than what I was anticipating, Joe. That's for sure.
No doubt about it. I mean, I had picked the Giants to win the NFC East, but after seeing the Cowboys play with Dak Prescott, if Dallas plays the way they did on Thursday, and well, it's only the first game, but if they play the way they did, Prescott actually looked better than Brady did in most of the game. I mean, they almost looked unstoppable at times. The Tampa couldn't do anything.
All right, let's dive into it. We still have some college football games that are still available for folks to put some money on, to put some coin on. Let's dive into them. Washington, Michigan, what side of the coin are you on here?
Well, you know, Anita, we mentioned this on Twitter for everyone to listen in, and a lot of people were sending me DMs and wanted to pick. I told them they'd have to listen live right here, and here
Woo!
It is. We're going with the dog in the game. We like the Washington plus the 7. The line has dropped. There's a 7's a tough number to find. Most of the places right now have it at 6.5. Obviously, Washington losing to Montana last week. Perhaps they were looking ahead. Michigan, I don't think is that good this year. It wouldn't shock me. It would not shock me if Washington wins this game outright, but I am taking the 7 points. I even bought the half point just to have insurance because I'm always looking for the best value and the best number.
Iowa and Iowa State.
You know, you take a look at this game, you know, Iowa has dominated this series. They've won 5 in a row, and the Cyclones, you know, they went to the Big 12 championship game last year, and the Cyclones barely won last week. They were big favorites, and they barely won. Now, this is an important game for both teams, but I think that the Cyclones were using last week's game as a scrimmage game. I'm going with the favorite in this game, man. I'm going to Ames, Iowa, and I'm going with Iowa State Cyclones minus the points. And last week, Iowa did everything. They annihilated Indiana, and that's why this line's relatively low. I thought this line would be higher, but at -4, I'm going with the Cyclones.
And you've got Texas and Arkansas as well.
Yeah, you take a look at this game. Texas here last week handled Lafayette. Lafayette came into the game rated. Arkansas has been an underachiever. Well, see, this is perhaps the biggest game Arkansas has had in the last several years for their program. They're getting 7. It's a big rivalry. I'm taking a home dog in this game. I think it's going to be a very close game. I know Fayetteville's going to be rocking in Arkansas. I'm taking the home dog. I like the Hogs plus the 7 points.
All right. Those are your college picks for the remainder of the afternoon. Now let's dive into some NFL plays as, again, week one. Somebody pinch me. I can't believe it's already here. As always, you know, folks here, you like to gamble on your own teams. Well, at least some people do. Let's start with the Jets. This is one of my favorite plays. I like Carolina so much that I'm playing an alternate point spread at -6.5 at +130. How are you playing this Jets Carolina?
I think we're going to have to make our first wager a bottle of wine, Anita, because I'm against you on this one. I like the Jets in the game. I think that this game is going to be a close game. I'm not saying that they're going to win, but it wouldn't shock me if they do. Carolina, you know, with Darnold, you just don't know what you're going to get with him. I think that this game could be decided by a field goal. It wouldn't shock me if the Jets won the game outright, and I'm getting 4. So I think the value on the bet is taking the 4 here because Carolina, you know, we don't know what McCaffrey's going to do. Obviously, he was injured last year. He was out for 13 games. But I don't trust Darnold, and that's really the main reason why I like Zach Wilson and the Jets in a game that has a little bit more significance. If this game was in week 6 or 7, it wouldn't be as meaningful. But listen, everybody's unbeaten right now. The only team that has a loss is the Cowboys. But everybody is 0-0 going into the season. And I just think that the Jets, I think Saleh will have his team ready. And I think that this game is going to be decided late. And I think whoever wins is going to be by a field goal. And I'm getting 4 with the Jets. That's my play.
So let me get this straight. You are trusting a quarterback who makes his way from BYU to the NFL, has only played in scripted offensive plays against 2 and 3 defensive players. You're trusting that player more than Sam Darnold. I'm just trying to understand this.
I think there's a lot more behind it. I mean, with the I just think the emotional factor with the new head coach. Jets defense isn't bad. I think that this game is going to be a close game. If Carolina wins, so be it. But I don't think getting 4 points, I could see this game being a 21-20 game or 17-20 game. That's where I'm taking the points. I don't think there's any value laying points with Carolina, especially with them with Darnold. Because, again, Anita, you talk about you worry about Zach Wilson, but Sam Darnold, I mean, does he really scare you as a quarterback?
No, but again, who's going to defend these wide receivers? You've got four rookies, two sophomores.
You're right, but the game plan for Carolina, what I think that they're going to do with Matt Rhule, I think that they're going to try and establish a ground game more than anything and not let Darnold lose the game for them. So they give the ball to McCaffrey, and he runs the ball maybe 15, 20, or even more, maybe eats up the clock. Hopefully that's the scenario, and that keeps the game relatively close. I just feel it's going to be a close game, and whenever I feel that way, I generally take the dog in the game here. I don't see Carolina winning by an enormous amount of points. And again, if the Jets did win and surprise me, surprise a few people, it wouldn't be shocking, at least not to me.
All right, Denver and the Giants. I like the under here at 41.5. What's your side?
I'm going with the Giants in this game here. I know Giants have no offensive line. I think that Daniel Jones is going to have a good season this year. He didn't look good in his only time he played in preseason against the Patriots. He struggled, but again, that was preseason. We don't put much value into it. Bridgewater obviously is a very good quarterback for Denver. We know about Denver's defense. I think the home dog here, again, I think it's going to be a close game, and whoever makes the few amount of turnovers will win this game here. I just think that I'd rather take a shot with the home dog with the Giants, and perhaps, you know, this is a very important game for them. Giants have a very short week. You got to remember on Thursday they go down to play at Washington and they come back for Atlanta. I know Fangio is a very good defensive-minded head coach, and Bridgewater is a good quarterback. I'm going, providing that Barkley is somewhat healthy, Anita. We don't know. He's going to play, but how well he plays is a question mark. If they can keep Barkley and keep the defense honest on Denver, I think that the Giants plus the three would be my play.
All right, one last game before we let you go, and that's one of the biggest games. I know you can argue, is it Pittsburgh against the Bills? I think it's Cleveland against Kansas City. These two teams, a lot of people anticipating both of them, you know, a lot of people put money on either one of them to reach the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl this year. What's your play between Cleveland and Kansas City, Joe?
In this game here, the public is all over Kansas City. It almost reminds me of the Thursday night game, although the line isn't as high. And this line is dropping, though, so it's a little bit of a contrast. Everyone, there's a ton of money coming in on KC, yet the line dropped from 6. There was some 6.5s early in the week. The line's down to 5.5. I'm expecting a close game. I'm going with Cleveland. I'm taking the points. Going against the public in this game here, that's the main reason why I'm doing it, because from according to my sources, there's over 3-1 action on KC at Arrowhead. It's very difficult to bet against Kansas City at Arrowhead, just like it was to bet against Tampa on Thursday. But listen, Cleveland had KC beaten, and were very close to beating them in the playoff game last year. Just a couple of bad breaks and a bad officiating call, otherwise Cleveland would have beaten them.
All right, Joe, thank you so much. Again, why don't you let the folks out there know, when do your shows air? How can they find you on social media? How can they follow all your picks, all that good stuff?
Well, great. On Twitter, I'm available. I post my free picks on at Joe with Sports on Twitter. And, of course, I'm on love that special effects. I'm on also New Times, Zita. I'm on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m., and now I'm on Sunday mornings at 6 a.m. So I'll be on Saturday and Sunday morning. And I'm shocked how many people are up that early. I get so many calls and texts at 6 in the morning. I mean, don't these people sleep? But people are Jones, and they want action. And I've got a lot of calls, and I wanted to thank everyone. And, you know, we mentioned that we had a post on Twitter, and I told people to listen in, and there were a lot of people looking for that Washington-Michigan game. So I'm hoping I can win money for the people with the Huskies plus the 7, because they wanted that pick. I told them they had to wait till 2:30 to listen to me live with you, because I know you have a lot of avid players. And I bumped into one of your friends from Hoboken at the Meadowlands yesterday, but we'll talk about that another time.
Okay. Joe, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday afternoon, and of course, week one of the NFL season. It's going to be fun. Thank you.
Let's go with the dogs, baby.
You got it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.